Hello there. Is that the wonderful Francois?
Oh, my God. Yes, it's me.
It is, Francois. I have loved your work going back to what you did with Timur for Abe Lincoln Vampire Hunter.
Oh my God, wow. Thank you so much. It's so sweet of you.
That was so spectacular. The production design was just impeccable. Period.
Perfect. Oh, it was so fun. We had such a blast on that movie. It was just so fun.
And Timur, because I've known him for so many years, he is such a stickler.
He's wonderful. He was really a wonderful director to work with. So much, so mischievous in pushing, you know, and out for anything, really. He was really great.
Mischievous is the word for Timur. And Dracula Untold, what you did in the silver sequence between Dominic Cooper and Luke Evans was just a stunner in that design. Everything.
Oh, yeah,
everything you touch, Francois, which is why you were the perfect production designer to come in for Ben with Air, because you understand period. You know how to achieve period without it feeling forced. It feels and looks authentic. And boy, oh boy, having lived through this whole era, there was not an unauthentic anything in this film. And so much started with the authenticity that you brought in the production design.
Well, thank you so much for noticing that. I mean, I feel like having grown up through the 80s, too, I that helped a lot.
Yeah.
But, you know, some of these 80s movies can feel inauthentic and forced and a little bit cliched, and then it all kind of it becomes distracting from the story you're trying to tell. So it's actually a very difficult period to portray in an authentic way, because many of us remember the 80s and we know immediately when it's trite or or pushed or forced or phony, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so some of the thing that I'm the most proud of in the film is that the production design just kind of washes over you, and you just don't, you really feel like you're stepping into a time machine, and it's just real. And part of, much of that is due to Ben's brilliant decision to open the movie with these flashbacks from actual events that we all remember.
Yeah.
These actual moments of pop culture from 1984. And then he subtly, sprinkles in shots from the actual sets and that we're shooting. And then all of a sudden, we're in, you know, he kind of, fades into our movie. And it feels like it gives us this, the hypnotic sort of, intro into 1984. And then we're in. Then we're in and we don't question anything after that.
That's it.
So I thought that was just really, really brilliant.
That really is one of the most effective and fun film openings I have seen ever.
Right. Yeah, I completely agree with you.
I could watch that on a loop for hours and be perfectly happy.
Yeah.
That is wonderful. Yeah. But
we're going through a renaissance of appreciation of the 1980s right now, and I can tell you that because I have a 9-year-old and a 14-year-old daughter, and they love the 80s, you know?
Oh,
cool. They think it's so cool that I was alive and lived through the 80s. they love the music, they love the fashion and all this stuff. When you look around, young people are really, just really into the 80s.
And it's funny because I was speaking with a costume designer yesterday doing a present-day film, but everything about the fashion is influenced by the 80s. Yeah, we go through these 20-year cycles, as I'm sure you know as well.
Sure.
Everything throughout history, it's like every 20 years, something comes back.
What's old is new again on that rhythm.
Yeah, and it's a good thing for you because I've got to ask you how challenging it was to come up with the impeccable designs that you did, such as with the Nike offices, the interiors, because 1984, it was still not an onslaught of social media. Facebook, things were just starting, and corporations weren't letting you into boardrooms. We didn't see all of that unless it was a carefully placed and scheduled meeting or photo op or announcement.
Oh my God, Debbie, you just hit the nail on the head. That's exactly what happened in this movie. When I brought on my longtime research collaborator, Ozzie Anguanzo, and he started doing research, and he called me and was like, there's nothing out there. It's like the internet's been scrubbed of Nike in 1984. I'm like, what do you mean? It's like there's nothing. They didn't take photos of anything because they were just, you know, they were a running shoe company in Beaverton, Oregon, and they just weren't. There's just nothing out there, and it's, of course, it's before social media, and it's before digital photography, and it's before. There's just they did very, very little press. And so as we worked on the research, we would find these artifacts, and it was like, oh my God, we found an NBC interview from 1984 we found this. So we found a handful of things that were incredibly useful. We found some footage and of the Jordan family actually coming to the, that was a big moment. Like you said, like that was actually an event, so it was recorded. Of the Jordan family coming and signing the contract, or being presented their proposal, I guess rather, that was recorded. There were some interviews in Phil Knight's office, so we had some reference of what that looked like, and so I felt like a detective where I was presented with these artifacts, we would like blow up the negative and zoom in and recreate every little piece of everything on Phil Knight's desk behind his on his shelf rather behind his desk. Every single tiny little thing has been recreated. We had endless conversations about what were the books that he would be reading, what were the books about business. He as a young man he went to Japan, and that was a very influential event in his life. And so there's Oriental furniture that he asked for to decorate the offices. So there were like little moments of clarity from the research, and then I filled in the rest of it by looking at what else was hip in corporate America in 1984. You know, the offices had most likely been designed several years prior to that. So it was really honing in and connecting with that the world of early 80s corporate America. And then creating our own version of the Nike headquarters that was a potpourri of research and also reference of from other corporations and in the world and sort of like trying to really get that that spirit of corporate America interjected in the space. Now, and in terms of challenges, what made it more challenging was Ben had this brilliant instinct to really move the camera through the space instead of having like the whole movie, you know, behind, with people sitting behind desks. So we're on the move, and all of these offices and the Nike offices, they're all connected. It was a two-story, 22,000 square foot world where you could roam and walk, and it was like, it was not a movie set, it was real. It was the real Nike offices, as they would have felt. The second challenge is that Ben has this style of filmmaking that he wanted to use on this film, where he had a Steve camera constantly shooting inserts on all the set dressing.
Oh, wow.
It was really inspiring. You would be inspired by just what he would see. So every desk, every drawer, every frame, picture frame, every sticker, everything has to be real enough to be shot in macro close-up. So it was really about, you know, the challenge was about creating a real 22,000 square foot office that you could walk around anywhere, open any door, and be transported into what it would feel like in 1984.
And that also, because of Ben wanting to shoot in that style, which is so effective, in this film, because the camera is moving, just like the film is structured, much like a basketball game, in terms of its pacing and its timing, so is the camera movement, as the ball is being dribbled back and forth down the court, being passed,
exactly.
as that camera
that.
Moves. I mean...
No, I love that. He does this incredibly brilliant technique where the movie opens up with a montage of pop culture moments from 1984, and
yep.
then he, like a slider, he fades in shots from our actual set, and then shots of our actors in the Nike offices, and then all of a sudden we're in 1984 at Nike, and it's like this hypnotic trance where you just are, for the rest of the movie, you're in 84, you just buy the whole thing.
Absolutely. Something that I really love, and you said something very key for, you know, these corporate America and the corporate offices and attaining that feel, is that these weren't built brand new. These buildings were obviously their offices were there in the 70s, and especially Nike,
right.
you're a startup company, you've got no money, you're in Beaverton, Oregon, and you've got the paneling on the walls, which is very 70s, so it was
right.
so believable to carry through. And also, I love the color palette that you put the office in, and with that orange and with the very 1970s vibe.
The orange and the browns, it was a very specific and controlled color palette for Nike, but we also had a very distinct color palette for each of these worlds,
mm-hmm.
Adidas and Converse and what have you. But you're absolutely right in that with production design, the pitfalls is sometimes to, when you're making a period film, to only reference the year in which the film takes place. When you're in 1984, you're actually surrounded by 1974,
mm-hmm.
and 1978, and then 1981, because that's your, the Nike offices would have been decorated, there would have been a base layer that would have been 5 years ago, you know? So we looked at the super graphics that were, you know, with those stripes and things that were very popular in 1980 as a motif, and then we layered in history over the top of that as to what would have been relevant when those offices had been done. And you're right, it's a company that was a mid-sized company, but they weren't, you know, a Fortune 500 company by any means. They were. It was much more banal, so we had to create a realistic character for the company that felt authentic to the time and to the size of the company back then.
It's just so spot on and perfectly done. And I know I spoke.
One thing I would also say is that. There was something very unique about the company back then, and that is that they allowed for individualism
mm-hmm.
to occur within their own company. So what made Nike unique was that when you go into Howard White's office and you go into Rob Strasser's office and you go into Peter Moore's lab, there was a lot of individuality that was allowed to occur, where you look around those spaces and you can really, there's all of these cues to their backstory. There's all of these specific character stories that it does two things. Number one is it gives the audience a sense of who these people are with backstory, but it also tells the audience that, wow, this is a really unique company. And looking back at it, when you look at the themes of the movie, you realize that Nike actually had a corporate culture that allowed a Sonny Vaccaro to exist,
mm-hmm.
be different, think different, to speak up, to have different ideas, to take chances. And it was an environment that didn't exist at Converse. It was an environment that didn't exist at Adidas. It was an environment where individuals were allowed to speak up and then ultimately take chances and change the world.
Absolutely. Absolutely. One location that is so key, you know, so much of the film is within the confines of Nike, but This is the Jordan home in Wilmington, and that kitchen and Viola Davis. Viola may only have 15 minutes of screen time in this film, but it's that kitchen and the home that tell us everything we need to know about this woman. So Viola doesn't need a lot of screen time. She doesn't need to say much because it is all there on screen. That tells us exactly who she is, what Michael's upbringing was, and what they value. Did you get help?
I have to tell you that that I was blessed to be able to work with the great set decorator Jan Pascal,
mm-hmm.
who is has such sensitivity to character and such passion. And we knew that we only had a few. We had this very important opportunity to tell the audience who she was, who Dolores was,
mm-hmm.
through the kitchen and the yard. And it was very deliberate to paint a picture of a woman who was a Christian and also ran the house and was really the leader and the sort of the this incredibly strong woman who inspired her children and who was really responsible for Michael Jordan in many ways, you know, as he said to Ben in the first meeting, you know, like his mother, the whole family reveres her. She was an incredible force. She was an incredible force in their lives. So, So the kitchen, you know, when you see somebody's, I joked with Jan that a kitchen, if you see someone's kitchen, you know what they are about immediately. Mm-hmm. That's the place of the house that really tells you a lot about what kind of person lives in that house is the kitchen. So it was a great place to stage that phone call. And then, you know, again, it's about sprinkling in all these little details. You know, we brought in coral shells, broken coral from the East Coast, and bags of broken coral, and sprinkled it along the pathways of the yard, because that's something that you would have in North Carolina in Wilmington. They'd use that as a material to walk on the paths. We matched a lot of the that scene was shot in Northridge, California. But you'd never know it from looking at the movie because it's also incredibly well cut with second unit photography from back east,
mm-hmm.
you know, where we use body doubles and what have you, and then Sonny's Matt's in the car with a green screen and plates in the background and everything. It really transports you to another world.
Yeah, watching that, you never would have guessed. The backyard scenes, you never would have guessed this was not shot on the East Coast in Wilmington.
Yeah, I agree. It was really well done. And again, what I just want to say is that it's a collaborative effort to make that happen. Billy Goldenberg, you know, he's one of the greatest editors I've ever worked with. And he was able to sort of, you know, cut these scenes that were done, the second unit scenes that were done so impeccably well together and it just like flows over you and you just accept it.
Everything about it is just seamless, this whole world. I'm curious about working with Robert Richardson because of the very nature of the fluidity and the movement of the camera. What was your collaboration with him like? Because in terms of establishing these offices and these specific sets, because he's got to have room to function.
Oh my gosh! Well, we had a very tight collaboration, and he's just such. He's got just such impeccable instincts, and I learned a lot from working with him about how to create. Realism and also make offices feel real, both real and cinematic at the same time, because we're not making a doc documentary here, we want it to be completely authentic and real, but at the same time, we want it to feel like a film with a capital F, you know? There are other similar movies that have similar sort of storylines about, you know, set in corporate America, but we wanted this to feel like a movie, like a real, have a real cinematic quality to it. And so to Bob's task of elevating this into making feeling like a movie was not an easy task. And I think just, and having someone of that stature really helped elevate and elevate the material to make it feel just so cinematic.
Mm-hmm.
Through the invisible lighting. And, you know, we had a 22,000 square foot office space for Nike that was all connected for these walk and talks. So everything, you could walk around and go into any office and open any drawer, and everything was dressed and anything could be shot in close up. So there was an incredible high level of authenticity in dressing.
Mm-hmm.
But Bob created a lighting system that was primarily practical, with practical mm-hmm. lighting in the ceiling, that was all not only controllable, it was controllable with color temperature and intensity, but it was also designed incredibly meticulously so you could walk and everyone would be lit,
mm-hmm.
Primarily with the practicals. And then without the need to sort of light every single setup from scratch. So he would have a base lighting and then augment that for the coverage, which enabled everything to be A, shot very efficiently, but B, it created also an authenticity to the quality of the lights that I thought was really, really successful.
That, I know, is a big factor that you have to consider in your production design, is the kind of lighting.
Yeah, and it was really just such a rewarding collaboration with Bob, because he was very enthusiastic, and I think it's because of Ben, because Ben created this atmosphere of family and friendship, where we were all working together over the summer in Santa Monica mostly, and everybody was working in the same building. That was our set. And seeing each other every day and really working shoulder to shoulder, and it created this really collaborative fluidity that was really rewarding. But you're absolutely right. Like when you have a movie that's shot that relies on the practical lighting, the practical lights a great deal, you need to collaborate closely with the director of photography to make sure that the practicals feel real, look authentic, but are also able to technically create the right value of lighting, a quality of light that's going to look great, you know?
Mm-hmm.
He would also, you know, gung-ho for a lot of these ideas with practicals, like specifically in the Nike lab. Jen and I had this idea of anchoring the scene around this giant light table.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, when I saw this light table weighed like a ton. It had to come up the stairs. It was unbelievable. It was like a World War II light table. But the light table for me was a metaphor for the magic. It was like the opening of Macbeth with the three witches, you know? And you got the characters huddled around this magical cauldron of a light table and seeing the shoe being born out of the light. And I think metaphorically that was something that was really fun to play around with.
And it looked absolutely spectacular. I mean, I love the fact there's negative space in the background and the light is focused there on the table and the designing of this shoe. And really a very, very powerful moment in the film. So everything you went through, everything you did in this film paid off, Francois. Everything.
Well, you know, you're like a real lover of cinema. You know, you notice all this stuff. I want you to come to every one of my movie premieres and talk to you afterwards, because you're so sensitive to all of the stuff that we spend a lot of time trying to incorporate into the movies.
I love your work. As I said, I've been loving your work going back to Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter, and of course, you know, Logan and Ford versus Ferrari. That just sent me through the roof. Just so well done. I can't wait to see what you bring us next, but I got to tell you, Francois, for my money, I have said this all year long. Number one, this is the best film that Ben has ever made. But number two, on every level, from Bob to Billy to you to costuming, every single element is award worthy.
He really brought together an amazing group of collaborators, and me, just who were working at their at the height of their powers, and it really paid off when you because film is a collaboration.
Yes,
you know, it really is a collaboration, and Ben understands that and appreciates that. It's about the artist who he surrounds himself with.
All I know is the Academy, the guilds, everybody has to like forget about Barbieheimer, and they have to look earlier in the year for one of the first real award caliber films, and that's Air.
Well, from your mouth to God's ears.
I know you have to run. Thank you so, so much. And
thank
I hope.
Thank you. It was my pleasure to chat with you anytime.
I hope we do it again in the future.
I hope so too. On the next one.